prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, a podcast where we review underseen horror movies, specifically those that have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
But this episode, we are not reviewing one movie. It's our end of the year episode where we are going to be discussing some of our Letterboxd stats and discussing our top five new to me movies for 2021. No 2021 releases, all new to me, like 2020 and earlier. But, you know, Lance and I, we were like, you know what, this would be a perfect opportunity for us to have some guests on with us. They've been kind enough to have us on their podcast. So I want to welcome Anthony from the Cult Movies Podcast and Lindsay from Schlock and Awe.
Welcome.
Hey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Excellent.
Awesome. Thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you for asking. This is an honor. So thank you so much.
Yeah, to be on a Discovery, this is like my dream. Because Cult Movies is so, like, I just follow the book.
Right.
I never get to do a Discoveries episode. So I was honored to, one, be asked by one of my favorite podcasts, but two, just to be able to do a Discoveries podcast. So I'm really excited. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're excited to hear what your picks are. But before we get to those, Lindsay, do you want to tell everyone about your podcast, Schlock and Awe?
Oh, yeah. I have a podcast, Schlock and Awe, which is a double feature podcast. So, well, it started off as a kind of thing of maybe picking high art and low art in a double and combining them together. Mm-hmm. Now it's just turned into a free-for-all, which I kind of prefer. But, yeah, it's a double feature. Every week there's a new double feature. We try to find – it's sort of more like different genres or old or new or kind of dissimilar movies that kind of have these little – cool connective tissue things in them. And I really enjoy doing it. And I've had Erica and Lance on, and I've had Anthony on multiple times. And it's a really, really fun show to do. So,
yeah, that was a blast when we were on covering Dark Ages, which was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. We're going to have to do it again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, so for folks like who like the double feature segment that we have in ours, you can get an entire podcast about a double feature with Lindsay's podcast. Anthony, Cult Movies Podcast. You've kind of touched on it already, but about following the book, but expand on that for our listeners.
Okay. So there's, for anyone that doesn't know, there's an author, historian, and film critic. His name is Danny Perry. And he is my favorite film writer. And I discovered him a few years ago, thanks to Bill Ackerman from Supporting Characters Podcast. He's got these three books called Cult Movies, 1, 2, and 3. And between the three, he covers 200 movies, like long form, 5,000 word essays, 10,000 word essays. And they're great essays. He's such a great writer. And so my thought process was, I'm going to have guests on. They're going to pick a movie from one of the books. And then we're going to discuss that movie on the show. And then offer up again. I like that everybody's doing this now, pairing suggestions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a way to be able to talk about more movies. But it's been really fun because we've had a couple crossover guests with you guys, and I just love talking to people about movies. So and then being able to kind of shine a light on Danny is the whole goal of the show. But it's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah. So this episode's coming out December 29th. I know you took a break during November, December. When is Cult Movies coming back?
Cult Movies is coming back January 2nd. Nice. Is the first episode of season 3. We're going to be doing Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And maybe somebody that is on this episode right now is going to be on that episode.
Oh. It's me, right?
No. Surprise!
Yeah!
Yeah, Ant and I worked it all out and just didn't tell you. So. All right. Well, everyone, be sure to check out Lindsay and Anthony's podcast. We will circle back to where you can find and follow them, and also put links to their shows and where to follow them in show notes. But we're going to jump right into it because we've got a lot to cover in this episode. And we're going to start with something from our Letterboxd stats. So if you have Letterboxd Pro, you have the ability to look at your stats for the year. You get limited ones if you don't pay. You still get like the email at the end of the year that tells you who's your most watched director and who's your most watched actor. But because all of us give our money to Letterboxd, so we don't have to put up with ads. And to, I know Lance, you do it because you're a stats nerd.
I could spend way too much time every day on just looking at my stats over and over again.
I already do that. I honest to God, I probably spend at least 45 minutes every day just looking at the same shit over and over again. Like it doesn't change drastically,
right?
You know, day to day. But I'll go there every single day in the morning, just be like, I feel comfortable with these numbers.
So we're going to start with most watched director. So Lindsay, who was your most watched director in 2021?
I was really nervous about the Letterboxd stats because I was kind of worried that Justin Lin was going to be my watched director, just because with lockdowns and everything, me and my partner have been watching a lot of movies together.
Okay.
And to be honest, it's been a lot of Fast and Furious. But no, it's actually, I feel a lot more comfortable with this. It's actually Sam Raimi.
Okay.
Nice.
I did a series on the Evil Dead movies for Shock and Awe this year, but also I have just been watching a lot of Raimi, which has been great. Like I watched Crime Wave for the first time, which is a really, really fun movie, and Drag Me to Hell and his Spider-Mans. So this year has been filled with a lot of Raimi, and I didn't actually realize how much until I looked at my stats and went, oh my God, it's Raimi. I feel much better about this being my most watched director.
I love Drag Me to Hell.
I just revisited it recently because it's got a child kill in the opening. So
it really does. Brutal one.
You know what? That's one that I haven't seen that I've always wanted to, but for some reason or another, just haven't watched yet.
It's fun.
It is. It's totally worth checking out because it's like his first original since, I guess, coming off of the Spider-Man movies, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those were blind spots. Lindsay, I watched a lot of Raimi this year too, because I hadn't watched parts 2 and 3 of the Spider-Man movies. A lot of my friends gave me hell, but I've corrected that. So
yes, Spider-Man 2 is really fast. It's a really good movie. It's not the movie that you think it is. And you're like, oh wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. He did a great job with the superhero movie.
Yeah.
Anthony, what about you? Who is your most watched director this year?
Well, I am a super pretentious prick and love watching art house movies. So my most watched director is, of course, Ingmar Bergman.
And never has more an Anthony King sentence been said.
My wife a few years ago bought me that set from Criterion. Huge, like all of his films. And I honest to God, as pretentious and prickish as it sounds, I think it's a must own. But anyway, so we're going through that. So that's obviously why he's my most watched, but also doing cult movies. You know, he has so many kind of unknown gems that are all included in this that I like to go and watch those to be able to maybe consider offering those as pairings with other cult movies on the show. But, we have grown in, my wife and I, and it's really fun being able to do this with her because she's not a huge movie geek like us, but she's totally open to watching, you know, Ingmar Bergman films. Not everybody is. So it's been really fun going through this set with her. And I mean, he's a brilliant filmmaker, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I have that set too. He's in my top five, but he is not my most watched.
Yeah.
Same. And a lot of that is because of, you know, the snowpocalypse we had here in Austin back in February. And I just curled up into a ball and I was like, I'm diving deep into my depression this week and I'm just going to fucking watch me some Bergman. And so.
I forgot the phrase you just used. So me and my wife are really we're going through all of it. And when you go through a Bergman movie, I mean, you do go through it. It's like an emotional drain. Like, because I watched a lot of Bergmans too. And I wanted to ask you not to spoil your picks for your top fives new to you, but do you have a Bergman on that list?
I do have a Bergman on that list.
I do too. I watched a lot of first time versions.
We're going to have a same scenes.
Love it. I'm sorry, Lindsay, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, watching Nothing But Bergman during a snowpocalypse is kind of the ideal circumstances to watch just a whole ton of Bergman, because you can just, give into your depression and just kind of sink into it, because it's all existential kind of, So it's, that's perfect.
If this is the way I freeze to death, I'm going to put Bergman on.
Exactly. I don't want another one for me to, dive in back into it. I would rather just kind of space it out a little bit for like the occasional bad day. No more snowpocalypse, please, Mother Nature. All right, Lance, most watched director.
So I was a little surprised with mine, because I thought it'd be somebody, from our podcast, because we do a lot of watches with our picks and stuff. Mm-hmm. But mine is Werner Herzog.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah, he's, I've watched a lot of his movies, but I really dove into his documentaries this year. Mm-hmm. So, and he has probably close to hundreds of them. Into the Inferno, about the active volcanoes and all over the world, and how it affects communities and even spiritual practices. His My Best Fiend doc.
That one's fun.
That one's the best. His relationship.
That's the one with
him and Kinski. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm dying to see that one.
Oh, it's great. I think it was on Prime. I don't know if it still is, but I think that's where I watched it. And then, of course, Kinski wasn't my top actor. I think he's in the top three because of Herzog being my top director. But I watched a lot of his films. So it was a great 2021 with Herzog coming through.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't think I rate anything of his under three, because it's just all too fascinating. And even if it's too much, it's still worth the watch.
Yeah. Agreed.
What about you, Erica?
I actually set goals for myself this year. So my director goal for the year was Ken Russell. I ended up with 7 films, but a lot of his stuff that I haven't seen, which I didn't want to just rewatch stuff that I had seen from him. I was like, I want to see more Ken Russell. But a lot of his stuff that I haven't seen just isn't streaming, and it didn't help that our video stores closed in 2020, which is where I could have gotten them. So mine ended up actually being, and I was surprised at mine too, because it's very random. Again, doesn't have to do with anything that we covered in the podcast, but it ended up being Freddie Francis.
Nice.
With 9 of his movies. Yeah. I guess it just, it shows sort of the scope of his work and just like being interested in the stuff that he's done. I think my favorite from him that I saw this year was The Psychopath from 1966, which I do have on our list for a potential future episode. Nice. All right. Most watched actor, Lindsay.
Because I was doing so much Raimi, Bruce Campbell was definitely at 10 movies. But also because he kept popping up in other stuff, like Waxwork 2, Lost in Time, Intruder, and also Mind Warp. So it kind of shows what kind of movies I was watching this year. I really enjoyed Waxwork 2, Lost in Time. I think it's just a really fun, dopey movie. Intruder is just really solid. And I don't know what Mind Warp is exactly, but I watched it. So he just, again, just kind of popping up and everything like that. But yeah, and sort of speaking to when you're sort of talking about Freddie Francis, I mean, Terrence Fisher was definitely in my top 5 of most watched directors as well, with Peter Cushing. So it's kind of cool to sort of see those little linear kind of Hammer connections popping up again. But I got a lot of Bruce in this year.
Nice. Anthony, what about you?
Okay, so my most watched actor is sort of uncharacteristically me, because it is Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh.
Ooh.
And which is not bad. I mean, for God's sakes, he's a master. But I got, do you guys remember, I can't remember, who's the like discount kind of Blu-ray factory? I think it's Deep Discount. Is that right?
Deep Discount. Yeah.
Okay. So they had like almost a run on the bank, but it was a run on, it was two things. It was the Hammer horror box set, right? Those 20 film. Mm-hmm. And then the Inner Sanctum box set. And so these are like, it was 6. And in this set, there's 6 like 65 minute kind of mystery horror movies, all starring Lon Chaney Jr. And my 9-year-old and I have been going through our Universal Frankenstein set. And of course, Lon Chaney Jr. is in a lot of the he was the Wolfman in a lot of those. So I watched 10 Lon Chaney Jr. movies this year, which is not a bad thing. But that, to me, that just sounds weird. Like, that's not who I would think I would watch a lot of.
That's good, though. I mean, that's always cool to see and kind of find out, like, when you look at your stats and you're completely unaware of all these actors or crew members that are popping up in your top three or whatever.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, well, that's why I love these stats.
Yeah,
this is the first time I've had Letterboxd for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and this is the first year that I've done, like, the went pro and got the expanded stats. So it's really interesting to kind of follow along, you know, who am I watching a lot of, who's popping up in, you know, a lot of times smaller roles, but it still counts, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Lance, most watched actor.
Okay, so mine, I'm going to give some credit to Anthony for this one.
Oh, I know who it is now.
We did, you know, we were guests on his Cult Movies podcast, and we covered Rock and Roll High School. And I think a lot of people that have listened to, you know, previous episodes or even that guest spot know that I have an infinite love for Mary Warnoff.
Yes.
So she is mine. I logged a few of the shorts she did.
Those count.
Okay.
TV shows don't
count. Huh?
I will count shorts. If it's a film that you log that's a short film, I think that counts. What I don't think counts is TV shows, and everybody logging the TV shows.
Yeah.
That doesn't count towards you. I've
logged a TV show and I rated it because it was the Twin Peaks Return, and that's just too.
I know you.
It's
you
too powerful.
I know you wouldn't be able to.
Not to share and let the world know that how much I love it. But yeah, so I did go down a little. I mean, I think she might have been in my top five last year. I'll watch anything with her. I do a lot of rewatches with her. I think it's 14. Yeah, 14 movies, including a couple of shorts. But yeah, the Rock and Roll High School that we did on Cult Movies podcast. We did Hellhole episode on ours. So that had me watch a bunch of movies I hadn't seen. I'd never seen the original Warlock that she was in. Motorama, Nomads with Pierce Brosnan.
That's right.
Doing
the
most ridiculous French accent you've ever heard in your life. recently, Todd Haynes just released that Velvet Underground documentary. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all guys have seen that. I think it's on Apple. Mm-mm. It's on Apple TV. But you know, she's one of the dancing girls at Andy Warhol's factories, and she toured with Velvet Underground, so she's in it quite a bit. Old interviews and recent interviews. So that was really, I mean, those are the best parts of the movie.
Yes, I just want to watch Mary Warnoff.
I mean, it's really, like I said, I could watch her all day, every day. It was her birthday like last week or
so. It was, yeah.
So everybody should still be celebrating as they listen to this episode. The great Mary Warnoff.
You'll be happy to know that as of yesterday, Mary Warnoff moved into my second most watched actor this year.
Oh,
yes.
There you go.
thanks to Black Widow. Which is funny because Lois Smith is in Black Widow, and she also moved up with Mary in my stat list. So that's really funny.
How far is she behind Lon Chaney?
Mary and Lois are at 7, and Lon is at 10.
Okay.
I think he's going to take it.
Yeah.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to change. I mean, we're recording like mid-December. I don't think anything's going to change.
Yeah.
I know nothing's changing for me right now because like my most watched actor had 14 and the next in line had 7. So that's not going to change. Yeah. So I had a goal this year of 21 Udo Kier movies in 2021 and I did not make it.
Oh,
I still think you can do it.
I don't think I can because I really wanted to do like new to me watches and it's hard without the video stores. Like, yeah, I can do torrents if I want, but looking at like what's available that I haven't seen, it would essentially just be me rewatching like Mark of the Devil, Suspiria, like all the, you know, the ones that I watch regularly anyway.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm happy. He's my most watched actor. I did get to see a couple of ones that were new to me that I did like. Most of them were newer ones like 2000 and later that are not good. But I did really enjoy, I guess if you can use a word to describe a movie about depression, I did really love Melancholia. That was the first time watch for me. He's in that, you know, Lars von Trier. I know he's a divisive guy because of some comments that he's made, but I think I've said many times on this podcast that like, I don't care.
Swan Song hasn't been released yet, has it?
No, it hasn't. And I was really I know it was supposed to be on VOD soon, but yeah, I do really want to see that. But you know, if anything, I might get to like 15 or 16 for him for the year. I'm not going to be able to make Udo.
I mean,
seven Udo movies.
I applaud you for how many you have watched.
So. I mean, 14 is a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were ones that I didn't want to watch, but I just did it because Udo was in it.
Right. Yeah. You did it on purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
There's some bad Udo movies out there, folks.
I watched one of the good ones recently. I got to go to the theater and watch Blood for Dracula.
Oh, wonderful.
And then halfway through, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a bit weird with Paul Morrissey movies, but he is so fantastic as this kind of petulant vampire. And the way that movie says horrors, I can't do it, but is incredible. And I want that as my
horrors.
I want that as my, like, my text tone. Just hit a curve going, the blood of horrors.
The blood of this horrors is killing me.
All right. So we are going to jump into our top five new to me movies for 2021. But before we do that, we asked our listeners on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to share what was one of your favorite new to me movies of 2021. And some of y'all did not read the description or and gave like five. So I'm choosing for you. I'm sorry. So, all right, on Facebook, Shad Youngblood, Django, 1966.
Yes.
Great. I love that people are getting to see that for the first time. That's amazing. Robert Prudham, Castle Freak, 1995. Mm-hmm. And actually, I will list one more for him because it was one of our episodes and it was Mirage, 1990. He listed that and was like, He acknowledges it's not a perfect movie, which we both said very clearly, but he loves slashers and hadn't heard of it before and was glad to have discovered it. So
yeah,
thanks, Robert.
Pick.
All right. Over on Twitter, Jim, A-Tunes, Bad Boy Bubby, 1993.
Oh, nice.
What a tough watch that is.
Lisa from the Bad Movie Bunny podcast, Grizzly, 1976.
Nice.
Lance, do you watch that in Animals Attack or Animals category for Horror Gives Back?
Which one?
Right?
Grizzly? Yeah.
Okay.
Loved it. Okay. And I just have to chime in here too, because you know me, I'm always like, I'm on the positive side of everything and trying to look out for everybody. But our tweet did say, you said one of your favorite new film to me. Okay. You pointed out one.
Yeah, I did. So, don't try to correct me mid-episode. How dare you?
When I read it, I really thought it was a list too. Like the way I first read it, I didn't think it was we were asking for just one single.
I've very deliberately put the word one in the tweet, in the Instagram story, on Facebook.
Even though we're only reading one, we're looking at all of them.
And I did look at all of them. Yes, obviously. Like it's great to see all of that, but I'm only listing one of these on the podcast. in the interest of time. Okay.
No, absolutely.
How dare you?
Freaking out from our folks.
All right. Back to Twitter. Duckman, A Chinese Ghost Story, 1987. Great pick. Giant Be With You, William Lee's Treasure of the Ninja, 1987, which
I just ordered that.
Awesome. Awesome pickup from Vinegar Syndrome and AGFA. Queer Horror Cult Podcast, Siege, 1983.
I bought that blow. I need to watch it.
It's fantastic. Severin, I think, put that one out.
Yeah.
Severin. Yeah.
And really great Siege movie, like the title implies. Canadian Assault on Precinct 13-esque.
Cool.
VHS podcast, The Devil's Gift, 1984. A Grass Blade, Absentia, 2011. And then over on Instagram, Flea Marked, Disembodied, 1998, which was one that we talked about in our Bleeding Skull episode.
Yeah,
that was one Annie brought up.
Yeah.
Horror Student, Blood Salvage, 1990. Actually, I think I have that on our list for potential April Showers of Blood. But I haven't watched it, but he recommended it, so we'll see. Matt, or MPLS Matt, Blonde Death, 1984. And I looked this one up on Letterboxd and instantly added it to my watch list. Nathan from I Hope You Suffer, Die Hard Dracula, 1998. Another one that we talked about in our Bleeding Skull episode. And they actually subsequently followed that up with a full episode on it. So if you want to hear more about Die Hard Dracula, you can listen to that. Old Goat Easel Works, Night of the Demon, 1980. Be very clear. Vinegar Syndrome just put that one out. It's the Bigfoot dick slashing movie, not the...
Pick that one up too. I'm waiting for it.
Horror Cave Podcast, Better Watch Out, from 2016. One of the few more recent horror movies that I actually do like.
Is that the kind of The Babysitter Gone Bad?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris Peckover. That premiered at a Fantastic Fest.
Oh, it did?
It was called something else at that time, but yeah, that's a fun one.
Nice.
Yeah, I did not expect to go where that movie went, so it was a really fun watch. Yeah.
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 A few more. Henry Monkey, Hong Kong Godfather. Excellent pick. Danger in the Water, The Last Matinee, 2020. I have not seen this one yet, but I have heard a lot of good things about it.
Same.
Captain Dynamite said El Vampiro, 1957. Love it.
Oh, yeah. That was a watch for me.
Yes. Neon Robot Graphics. I'm going to cheat again and give two for him because...
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. There's a lot of strange...
Okay. It's self-promotion, okay. All right? One pick was Stone Cold, which I know, Lance, yeah. You know, that's one of your favorites, but also Spider Labyrinth, which we covered on our show.
Those are two good, worth mentioning picks. Yes.
See? Thank you.
100%.
Can I just say, yours is the only podcast that I listen to, even if I haven't watched the movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know what I'm getting into with, 99% of what you guys talk about. And so I appreciate knowing a little bit or a lot of bit about some of these movies before I go in and watch them. The Spider Labyrinth, I had to listen to you guys before pulling the trigger on that one.
Okay.
No, you guys have helped made major decisions of which, do I go on a massive hunt for this movie or do I just thing? And I do the same thing. Like I'll listen to your episodes most of the time I'm like, what is this movie? Yeah. Where do I find it?
I mean, I think of it like I listen to podcasts if I haven't seen the movie. And I think we try to section off our spoilers for a certain part. I mean, sometimes we're really just not able to do that. But I think of it more as like, this is an endorsement and here's why you should watch it. And right. Even if, you know, unless it's giallo, like I'm very clear about like with the giallos, we're spoiling the twist ending and that can definitely take you out of it. But with everything else, it's kind of like, it doesn't replace the experience of watching the movie for yourself. If anything, right. Like you've got a little bit more context going into it. So I personally enjoy that. So, but we do, you know, our episode that came out mid-month for Confessions of a Serial Killer, we're actually telling folks like you should listen to the episode before watching the film.
Yeah.
Because if you've seen Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, this movie's already been spoiled for you anyway. So we have a rare instance of recommending watch or listen to the podcast before you watch
first,
the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Couple more. Jensen Harper, Possession, 1981, Zulawski's masterpiece.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh my God. Anthony.
Just got my blue. Got my blue. So I don't have any excuses now for not seeing it. So it's sitting on my shelf.
All right. Well, Possession's going to come up a little bit later, not as one of my picks because I've seen it before, but as a related to, anyway, we'll get to
okay.
I'm getting ahead of myself. Got two more. Luke Pajowski, Thundercrack, 1975, which is a sex film. And I'm very thankful to Letterboxd for this year finally not being prude and allowing adult films to be on there and
yeah,
logged.
No shit.
Thank you.
And huge congratulations to the team that put that together because that was a huge undertaking.
Absolutely, yeah. Liz Purcell and Justin LaLiberty had a big hand in that. And so thank you, people. I can finally get rid of all, like, I finally got to delete my Land Before Time 10, The Waterfall, and Trace.
Bookmark, yeah.
So that I can actually log water power. Thank you, Letterboxd. All right. And then finally, our friends over at Death by Video, Vampire's Kiss, 1988.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So thanks everyone for sharing your picks and letting us know what was new to you. All right. Moving forward, our top fives.
Yeah.
Let's go back in the same order. You think, Lindsay, you want to kick us off with one of your first picks?
Okay. I am going to go with my, I'll go number five and then go up, I guess. My number five is The Fan, or Der Fan, from 1982. It's a German movie. It's amazing. I don't want to give too much away about this one. This is one, I think, where if you don't know what you're getting into, it's amazing. But it's essentially about a young schoolgirl living in, I think, either Berlin or Hamburg, who's obsessed with this kind of new wave singer and is determined to get to one of his concerts and meet him. And then it goes in a very amazingly witchy questions on authority figures, da-da-da kind of thing. And it is absolutely incredible. So, yeah, The Fan. Remember, it's the 1982 German one, not the other, not the 1981 with Lauren Bacall, and not definitely not the one, the Tony Scott one. That's a very different movie.
I would have, you know, I've seen the Lauren Bacall one too, and that one's pretty okay.
That one's really fun. Yeah,
It's not Der Fan though. Like Der Fan is wonderful, and I love that movie so much that I actually ended up watching another movie by that director. I think it was for Junesploitation.
Yeah, Eckhard Schmidt.
Yeah. Yes. It was like the gold something. It was gold something. I can't remember it.
The Gold of Love.
The Gold of Love. It was experimental and I liked it. John hated it. I don't know. It's not going to be for everyone. I think Der Fan is for a lot more people than The Gold of Love is. So I'll just leave it at that.
No, Der Fan is actually very accessible because it is very much of this coming of age kind of movie. But it is an absolutely amazing, the music's amazing, especially if you like new wave. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just surreal enough to get my sort of interest going. And then I just love the ending so much of this movie. So yeah, that is my first pick.
Nice.
Very nice.
You know, coming up in April, I'm doing this weekly series at F This Movie where I'm writing about a movie from 1982. And The Fan, it's been on my watch list for ages, but it came out in 1982. And so I'm saving my first time watch for when I write about it here in a few months. So I'm really excited to finally sit down and put down my reactions on paper for this.
Nice. Awesome.
I cannot wait to read it. It's an amazing movie. I love it.
Yeah, my watch list is going to take off after this episode. I love it. I've so many movies I haven't seen.
He's just going to add your guys' movies. He's probably not going to add my.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes. I add your picks to a notepad just so you can't see.
Oh. All right, Anthony, what's your first pick?
Okay, Fun City Editions is mine, but so many other people's kind of favorite newer label right in the past year, and Jonathan has done such great work putting out so many great films and great packages that look great. And these were films that, like, you know, had been not on Blu-ray forever, you know, they've never been on Blu-ray, and some of them, like, didn't even jump to DVD. So among those releases, my favorite of those is my number 5 discovery of the year. And I should say, I kind of follow Brian Sauer's rule with discoveries. All of mine are going to be pre-2000. And, you know, you guys know I agonized over, should I include some newer ones, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going with my list. Anyways, I'm talking about Arthur Baron's Jeremy from 1973. And first and foremost, you got to get that disc from Fun City Editions, order from Vinegar Syndrome. But it's such a sweet, just, you know, coming of age in New York City movie from the 70s.
Does anyone else know you do this?
Nope. It's a secret.
Good. So I wouldn't tell them if I were you.
You know what else I do?
What?
Promise you won't laugh?
I promise.
Well, sometimes when I'm walking down the street, I see some guy ahead of me. You know, just any guy. Well, I want to race him. You know, just me and him. I create an imaginary finish line. I call the race in my head.
I don't believe it.
Am Miller.
Getting to know Jonathan over the past year through the podcast and talking to him a lot, I've come to realize my favorite type of genre of film is the 70s drama, because there's no other movie. They don't make movies like that anymore, because there's just this sort of heart and compassion that goes into these dramas that were made in the 70s that just doesn't happen anymore. And anyways, Jeremy is such a sweet movie. It stars Robbie Benson and Glynis O'Connor. you know, like I said, it's just, it's a great coming of age story. If you don't tear up a little bit when you watch it, then you are so dead inside. It's not even funny. But I so recommend this movie. It's so great.
Lance is pointing at me. It's like, Erica won't cry.
that goes without saying. We all know Erica's dead inside. She likes to watch children die on screen.
I can't argue with that. Fingers are pointing, accusations are flying. I'm like, it's all true.
Has anyone else seen Jeremy yet?
I have not. I did pick up. I start counting from them, yeah. But I haven't picked any up the other ones.
Fun City Editions. All their stuff is good too. I got to start counting too.
I had to narrow it down to just because, honest to God, all of the releases this year could have been on my top 10. And I was like, I mean, it's not fair. Like, they're all going to be grouped in with Jeremy. Jeremy's going to kind of be the main one. Mm-hmm. But for God's sakes, all the movies that Jonathan's putting out with Fun City are so great and entertaining.
Nice. Yeah, Walking the Edge is amazing. That's the only one I've gotten from Fun City at this stage. But yeah, I sort of watched it as soon as I got it. And then I received this replacement disc and I went, wait, what was wrong with my original disc? The movie looked amazing. So I haven't gone through the extras. But yeah, no, that they're really great.
Can't wait to check that out. Robert Forster.
Yes.
I saw it before it got a Blu-ray release and now I'm mad. Like, it's one of those things where it's like you watch a shitty copy of something and then like a week later it gets announced getting a Blu-ray. I'm like, that's fucking great.
Yeah, I found it on YouTube. I found it on YouTube and then they announced it a couple days later and I was like, never mind, I'm not gonna watch this. Yeah. I can wait. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Such is my life. All right, Lance, what's your first pick?
Okay, so I didn't want to pick anything that we covered on the podcast.
Same, yeah.
Some of mine though did fall into like, you know, the like June exploitation picks and mm-hmm. stuff. Cause I really want to focus in on how great they are.
Double down.
They're pretty much my top of the year. So first one I'm picking is Jimofanakis Penitentiary 3.
Nice.
So from 1987, this was a June exploitation pick. So, I mean, people might've heard me kind of gush over it earlier, but, and of Jimofanakis, cause I love all his movies. I've seen all his features at this point after Penitentiary 3. There's only three in the series for this one. Vinegar Syndrome, they've released the first two, and I hope they do part three at some point.
You know, I feel like if you're doubling down on it now, you're putting the double...
It's out there in the universe. It's
something in the... You know, you're putting our our double unsung horrors gas into the universe or something like that. I don't know.
I hope this happens. I need it. I just need it to fit there on my shelf with the other two. But yeah, like the plot of all the other penitentiary films, it's fairly similar. We follow a character named Too Sweet, who's played amazingly by Leon Isaac Kennedy. And he's wrongfully convicted and imprisoned, and he's forced into these illegal boxing tournaments between inmates, all put together by the warden and the staff within the prison. All three of them have an amazing cast of characters, but part three just takes it to another level where Fanaka just writes these characters that are, they're just like... so unbelievable. You have to see it to be believed. It's, I don't want to give anything away. I think I gave some of them away, some of the characters when we talked about it in Juice Plantation, but yeah, no, I just kind of want to stress that everybody should be watching more Jimofanakis. We've talked about MMA, mm-hmm. Not the fighting style. It's a name.
MMA.
and Welcome Home, Brother Charles.
Oh yeah.
His last film, Street Wars, is probably my least favorite, but I mean, it's all of his stuff are so good. I think he's a powerhouse at pacing and just writing dialogue for very specific characters. And then whoever casts him, should get all the awards too, because everybody's perfectly cast, perfectly acted. So yeah, I mean, most of his movies are criminally underseen. They all have like under 1,000 views on Letterboxd, except for the first Penitentiary. So everybody listening, check out all Jimofanakis' films, but Penitentiary 3, you don't have to watch it. You know, they call back the backstory of how Too Sweet got to jail. You're not going to miss anything with parts 1 and 2, but watching them in order is how I prefer it.
Sure.
But yeah, Penitentiary 3.
Nice. I watched number 2 for June Exploitation and wrote about it, and I despise boxing movies, and it was so funny. I was talking to somebody about how much I hate boxing movies. Mm-hmm. And then I hadn't seen the first Penitentiary. And I was like, okay, I'm going to queue up my next movie I need to watch for my thing. And it was Penitentiary 2. And it's a boxing movie. And I was like, God damn it. You fucking
I remember this.
Penitentiary 2 is way more boxing heavy than the others. Like part one, it's basically Too Sweet getting, being imprisoned. Right. Then this boxing thing kind of pops up. But yeah, Penitentiary 2, if you don't like boxing, that's
so much boxing.
These probably are. So Penitentiary 3 has boxing too, but they take this like created drug that the inmates create and they, give them to other inmates and they turn into these incredible hulks and monsters. So they fight to the death. So it's more like a gladiator style of fighting. It's not necessarily boxing. It's just violent fighting.
All right.
So definitely check out Penitentiary 3.
All right, I will jump into my first pick then. I watched this at Austin Film Society earlier this year. I did check on Letterboxd, though, and it looks like it's also on Criterion Channel and Canopy, depending on where you're at, because Canopy is linked to your city's public library. So it's not on my Canopy, but it is also on Criterion. So my first pick is Faust from 1994. This is a Czech film directed by, also, I think all of my picks, I'm going to mispronounce all the names. I'm looking at my picks. I'm going to mispronounce everything. All right. Czech film directed by Jan Švankmajer. So this one is difficult to explain. It's easier if you watch a trailer for it. And so I'll probably post one before the episode comes out. But I'm going to cheat and use part of the Letterboxd description for this. So this is a very free adaptation of Marlowe's Dr. Faustus, Goethe's Faust, and various other treatments of the old legend of the man who sold his soul to the devil. Švankmajer's Faust is a nondescript man who, after being lured by a strange map into a sinister puppet theater, finds himself immersed in an indescribably weird version of the play, blending live actors, clay animation, and giant puppets. This, I'm going to say it up front, this movie is not for everyone. and it can be challenging to sort of line yourself up with the movie and figure out like what's going on. If you know the story of Faust, fine, but it's honestly, it's not really going to help you with this movie. It's not a linear narrative by any means. I'll just leave it at, if you're into surreal art house films or even just something unconventional and completely different, give it a try.
Is there stop motion animation?
Yeah. The giant puppets are the best part though. Like it's, I can't explain it. You have to, I'll post a clip of it.
I have written it down and I am looking forward to seeking this one out. This looks insane.
yeah. This went to the top of my list here.
Winning. I'm just kidding. It's not a competition.
What about Penitentiary 3?
I love boxing movies, Lance.
Team it with Rocky 4.
Oh, God. No, can we double Faust and Penitentiary 3?
Yeah.
You can double anything if you try. You can
pair Penitentiary 3 with any movie.
You cannot pair Faust with anything.
Well, okay. Well, today I paired... Not on purpose, but I watched It Happen on Fifth Avenue, followed by 2000 Maniacs.
What?
That's a perfect pairing.
That completely works.
Oh, that worked. I'd be hard pressed to think of a double feature for Faust. I'd have to really.
Movies like that.
I would have to dig deep into my like weird art house movies to find one that I think would work.
What about like Mad God? The one that we just watched.
I don't really want to recommend Mad God, unless you just want to watch 30 minutes of 90 minutes. I love it, but it's a hard watch. So anyway, we talked about that in our Fantastic Fest episode. Let's get back to it. Lindsay, what's your next pick?
My next pick is a Shaw Brother movie's Five Element Ninjas, I think from 1980.
It's so good.
Yes. I mean, this movie just blew me away. Like, I've just been getting into Shaw Brothers for the last couple of years, and is a bit, it's a typical Shaw Brothers. It's a revenge story, and someone has to train to be able to go beat the main dude or main ninjas or whatever. But they actually have five elements of ninjas. Like, I think this guy, I can't remember all. But the thing that really sticks with me is that one guy's having a fight, but his intestines is like hanging out of his pant leg. and I lost my goddamn mind. No, this is a so fun movie. The more I watch Shaw Brothers, the more I am just falling in love with it every single time, because they are just so fun, so acrobatic, so much fun. And it's kicking instead of punching, so it's not quite boxing, Anthony. But no, this is – it's so – I don't know. I was just watching with a grin on my face, and I absolutely loved it. Yeah, it's one of my favorite discoveries of the year, so it's great.
Awesome. Nice. It's such a crowd pleaser too. Like, I
really is.
I put this on for my birthday marathon 2 years ago, like right before COVID started getting stupid. Mm. And people who were just not even, they're not even really movie people. They just showed up because whatever. And they were watching it and they were like, what is happening? Oh my God, this is fucking amazing. And like cheering and standing up at the end. Like, it's that kind of movie. So this is one, I think 88 Films might have a release of this. It's on my mm-hmm. shelf. I can't remember who put it out. It's probably 88. But if you get a chance to see this one in theater,
it would be amazing.
With a crowd, this would just be such a pleaser.
Yeah.
It really is. I need to get that.
Thanks to your shot guest, I went on a little Shaw Brothers exploratory mission that month, because I'm not big on like martial arts movies or kung fu, mm-hmm. but you guys got me really pumped up about it. So it was fun kind of watching a handful of those.
I might get you pumped up with one of my picks later then. I don't know.
Oh, good. Oh, pump me up.
Yeah, I ended up, even though I know you didn't do any of the Mr. Vampire, I ended up getting like Mr. Vampire and Hex and some of those kind of ones as well. Black Magic after Shaw series. So, no, that was a great, great series of movies.
Thanks.
Yeah, Corpse Mania would probably be one of my top five new discoveries to me.
Yeah.
But we had an episode on that.
Right.
I love that.
Yes.
Honorable mention.
That movie sounded amazing. I need to still find it, but that movie sounds amazing.
Yeah. All right, Anthony, what's your next pick?
Okay. For the first time this year, I got to experience Alexander McKendrick's Sweet Smell of Success. I think it was January I watched it. And God damn it, that fucking movie sticks with you. Mm-hmm. I love... Because there's a Broadway musical, so I'm a big musical guy, and there's a Broadway musical that stars John Lithgow and Brian D'Arcy James, and Lithgow is Sidney Falco, and then J.J. Hunsaker, and then Sidney Falco is Brian D'Arcy James. So I know the musical really well, and I knew the story, but I'd never seen the movie, and so I watched for the first time this year, and I didn't realize like how dark the original movie is. Like, it is, you know, I love a cynical movie. I love a depressing movie. And something about this is like, they nail the, like how depressing and cynical the noir subgenre really is. They get it so well in this movie. And then Tony Curtis is like,
he's such a weasel.
Oh my God. Like, you do not want to fuck with this guy. And his character, like Sidney, is just like, he's living in my head now. And by the way, Sidney Falco is one of the greatest character names ever. But God damn it, this movie is so good. And so I think it was on Prime maybe when I watched, or maybe it was a TCM or something. But I went and immediately bought the Arrow Blu-ray. Nice. During a sale, but oh God, what a great film.
Very nice. I think I just got to, it was either this year or last that I watched it for the first time as well. And yeah, hard agree. It's so, so good.
It's adding to my watch list.
No, just the dialogue is amazing. Just the, you're a cookie made out of arsenic. I don't know. Burt Lancaster's performance in that movie is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think I watched it as part of like a Burt Lancaster kick. Like, I'd just gotten The Swimmer from Grindhouse, and I was like, More Please, and I watched The Train for the first time, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Anti-siege movie. Yeah, really. I'm Burt Lancaster all day, folks.
So good. So good.
All right, Lance, your next pick.
Okay, so this was one of my first watches of 2021. I was on a big Franco Nero kick. I think when you started, I remember you told me about your Udo Kier, little challenge. I was like, maybe I'll do Franco.
Keep bringing up my failures, Lance. Thanks.
After this, my last three movies are all Udo Kier movies. I thought, maybe Franco Nero will be my pick. You know, I kind of wanted to do what you're doing, but it became Ari Warnoff. But it's Sergio Corbucci's Compañeros.
Okay.
From 1970.
Of all the heroes, renegades, and dirty low-down thieves the West has produced, none can compare with
Compañero!
Fate brought them together.
You're going to witness a classical squashing of the head!
Greed made them inseparable.
Don't take your eyes off the sweet.
If you're nervous because you want to join us, then be my guest.
And violence made them Compañeros.
So this one was on Tubi. And, like Corbucci's well known for spaghetti westerns, Django, The Great Silence. Yeah, which the Twitch of the Death
Nerd
Gang
did their episode on that. Yeah, it's really great.
Everybody stop talking about that movie because it's not going to come up later, okay?
Yeah, so this one's all of his films, I think, are worth watching, because when I was on that Nero kick, I watched The Mercenary. I had already seen Django, but I rewatched it. But it's still like the common kind of violent, grimy spaghetti Western tone you get with Corbucci. But this inserts a lot of comedy. And it works like incredibly well, particularly due to the cast, which is Franco Nero, who is surprisingly playing a Swedish mercenary. so that's already funny in and of itself.
Yeah.
Jack Palance, he plays this very angry American who's out to get revenge on Franco Nero's character, who's his old business partner.
This is one and only.
You are my number one.
But he has this pet hawk too that plays a big role in this movie, and of course there's Tomas Milian.
Wait! What's the hawk's name?
Oh man,
do you remember?
I don't remember the hawk's name.
It's Marcia.
It is Marcia. Yeah, when it was said, I was like, "This Marcia, you're going to spend a lot of money on this kind of this convoluted script." But they're like, "What do we call the hawk, Marcia?"
Let's do it. They're Italians. They're like, "That's like a real kick-ass name." Marcia.
And then who leads and steals the show is Tomas Milian playing El Vasco. And he's this Mexican revolutionary. He starts off as this peasant, but he becomes this, he starts this revolution. So this Mexican revolution is kind of connecting all these players together. Nero is trying to sell arms to soldiers, while Jack Palance's character and his pet hawk, Marcia, are after Nero. And it just turns the ridiculousness in this, it goes up to 10. And I just was smiling the entire time. It was a good way to start the year. And yeah, I think you should check it out. Oh, and there's a Morricone original score too. So
bonus.
Yeah. I mean, if you score all this ridiculousness with Morricone, it's going to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was on, I think I watched it on Tubi, but I know there's a Blue Underground release out there too. But Compañeros, 1970.
Nice.
What about you, Erica?
All right, my next one is, actually, I think I loaned it to you, Lance, so you probably have it at your house somewhere. My next pick is Spider, 1992. Yeah. This has a Mondo Macabre Blu-ray. It is a Latvian film directed by Vasilijs Mas. I'm sure I pronounced that incorrectly.
Sounds good.
So this is about a young woman who agrees to sit as the Virgin Mary for a painter. And it essentially becomes a story of sexual awakening. And she starts experiencing these nightmares and fantasies in which the painter turns into a giant spider and there is a sexual element going on there.
So just say spider fucking.
I mean, that would imply that it's consensual. So,
Oh my!
Oh. Watch list. That's why you do that. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So I mentioned Possession earlier with one of the listener picks. If you like Zulawski's Possession, specifically sort of the ending of it, I'm not spoiling it for the folks who haven't seen it yet.
Thank you.
I think you will like this film. Even if you don't vibe with the events that are happening, it is gorgeously shot. It is foggy and just, it's just rich. You're just watching it and you feel like you're and drenched in fog yourself. I think, what was my letterbox review? I wrote, like watching a pile of exploding arachnid viscera through a foggy kaleidoscope.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm gonna try and get this watching during the holiday break.
Okay. Because this is a maybe for an episode later, so I don't want to get too far into it. It's all hinging on Lance, folks. If Lance doesn't like this movie, then we're not going to cover
it. Hey, schedule it. I'm going to like it. What you've described.
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
But doesn't Lance generally everything? I do remember a specific episode when he was vacation when he kept recommending like 2-star movies.
Right. I know.
Hey, somebody might like it. You know, that's all. That's
all right. I'm putting on the list and you're just going to have to accept it. So Okay. Yeah. All right. It's coming in 2022, folks.
Yes. Excellent.
All right. Did I mention where that? Yeah. Mondo Macabre Blu-ray. All right. Lindsay, your next pick.
Okay, my next pick, I know I watched this on Amazon Prime, but I was just checking, and it looks like it's not there anymore, which is sad. So you'll have to go and find the DVD, because I don't think this has a blu, which I think is a travesty. And that is Michael Powell's 49th Parallel from 1941. This is an early, I think this is Pressburger and Powell, actually, but this is an early, I went on a slight Michael Powell kick this year. And this is early on in their sort of their propaganda World War II movies. And it's essentially about this U-boat of Germans who go stranded on the coast of Canada. And they essentially just, basically a 12-man army to try and conquer Canada so they can get into the States who haven't joined the war. It was a purposeful movie to try and get, to convince the American population to join in World War II. So it came out, I think it was being made just before Pearl Harbor.
They were alone. Between them and safety lay 1,000 miles of dangerous terrain and a whole hostile nation. 49th parallel, a peaceful, undefended frontier. To the north is Canada, which, to these men, is 3.5 million square miles of desperate adventure.
It's an amazing movie. Like, there's cameos from Laurence Olivier, Leslie Howard. It's absolutely terrifying because these guys are the scariest people on earth. And it's got one of the most amazing I read the room wrong scenes I have seen in a movie. It's really well done and really terrifying. Because it's literally a they're coming to get us movie for World War II. And yeah, I would, if you can track this down, I would totally recommend watching it because it is an amazing movie and not one of the Powell and Pressburger movies that get talked about because they had not invented color yet. So this is still a black and white movie. But yeah, it's an amazing, amazing movie.
It looks like in the States it's streaming on Criterion Channel and
Tubi. Oh, excellent.
And what was the second one, Anthony?
Tubi.
Oh, even better. Okay, there you go. Good for the people who refuse to pay for anything like me. All right, Anthony, your next pick.
Okay. This is a movie directed by a guy, I don't know if you guys have heard of him. His name is Sergio Corbucci, I believe is how you pronounce it.
And it's called the second best director of Westerns, I think, isn't it? Or
I don't know if you guys have heard of this movie. It's called The Great Silence. like you mentioned, our friends at Twitch of the Death Nerve just, as of this recording, dropped their Great Silence episode. And so I had to go and buy the Film Movement Blu-ray as soon as possible so I could watch it before listening to the episode. And God damn it. That fucking ending of the movie, like, I was like, I'm not going to say anything.
I haven't seen this one yet.
Okay.
This is a solid 4-star movie. Like, up until, like, the... For me, for me, is a solid 4-star movie. No, 4.5-star movie. It's like, this is really fucking good. And then the ending, and I was like, well, obviously 5 stars, and I'm supposed to go to sleep after this. What the fuck? And I'm sorry for all the language, but my God, this movie just completely blew me away. And, you know, the more it sits with me, and this is just, this is a week out, not even, this is less than a week out. I watched it this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised by the time I write this list up for at this movie, this might move up to the number 2 spot. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But it, God, this is, it's a perfect movie. This is probably, I will say, my favorite Western, and I love Westerns. This is probably my favorite Western.
It's such a great snow Western. I mean, you can feel the cold emanating from the screen with this one. It's, I don't know, Klaus Kinski is particularly deranged. This movie is amazing.
Yeah, great pick.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it.
Double Corbucci. Yeah.
As it should be.
Actually, it could be triple. I don't know. We're not done yet.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, Lance, what's your next pick?
Okay, so I'm going with an Indonesian horror, Queen of Black Magic from 1991. Okay, yeah. This was actually my double feature pick for the Black Magic 2.
Right.
With
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, again, I've already briefly chatted about how much I kind of loved it. But having it finally watched, I watched it for the first time this year. It's one that's definitely stayed with me. Also, these aren't kind of ranked. I'm just throwing out like my
mine
favorite
aren't
five.
Ranked They're either. Kind of, I refuse to do that to one movie. Fine. I'll do it later.
There is a remake out there, a retelling of the Queen of the Black Magic that was released in 2019. And that one's a lot of fun too. Made by Indonesian filmmakers. It premiered at Fantastic Fest last year, the digital one, the Fantastic Fest at Home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, 2 years ago.
You watched it. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I had given up on Fantastic Fest that year.
I think both versions are currently on Shudder. At least they were. Okay, cool. So I recommend them both. But this, the original, then of course I recommend them both, but the 1981, one is just, it's a whole other level because of the lead character, Murnie, who is the Queen of Black Magic. She's played by the amazing Susanna, who's known as the horror queen of Indonesian cinema.
Oh yeah.
And she has so much charisma in this performance and other performances I've watched during, but this one especially. She's kind of shown every possible emotion in her Murnie character, who's wrongfully accused of being a witch of sorts, like a black magic witch. And she's attacked and thought to be killed by the local villagers, but she's found and healed by an old man who actually does teach her the ways of black magic. So she returns to this village and gets her revenge on, you know, all those people that tried to kill her. But along with those like great emotional aspects that Susanna as an actor goes through, this thing has wizard battles. It has fantastic gore, like gnarly decapitations, a lot of worms, a lot of maggots. It's just like a treat for the senses. And that's why I think I paired it with Black Magic 2, is because of the amount of maggots and worms.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does lean into religion, the power of prayer, but that's kind of expected, you know, for black magic films, especially during the late 70s and early 80s. It doesn't take away or bother the story at all. It all works. And again, this was one that was on our list when we first started the podcast.
Yeah, and then it got over.
Yeah, it's just over 1,000 views, so it doesn't make sense to me. I feel like more people should watch it. It's on Shudder. I think it might even be on YouTube. Check it out.
Yeah. I mean, that can be like a No Rules November pick now. Look at it that way.
It could be, but now I brought it up twice on
TV. That's true. Episodes. Yeah, we're done.
But it's No Rules, but it's No Rules November.
What is it with Indonesian horror, man? Like, they make some of the greatest horror movies ever. Like, just the scariest shit comes out of that country.
It looks so real. Like, you don't know if it's, are they really killing that person? I don't know. It's very effective.
It's just unhinged. They're just like, they don't abide by any rules. They just go off of like cultural mythology, and it's just It's so much fun. I love Indonesian horror.
Yeah, I've only dipped my toe into Indonesian. It's a lot of being more of the modern stuff, and that's unhinged. So I can't wait to get into sort of more of the older stuff just to go, what the hell?
Yeah. Mondo Macabro has a lot of good releases, mostly DVD, like the older stuff. So like if you find those floating around in like a used bookstore or something, like anytime I see, like that's what I scroll for. I don't even look at titles anymore. I look for labels. I'm looking for like Vinegar, Severin, Shout Factory, Mondo, like, you know, like I'm not even looking at anything else.
We were laying in bed last night looking for a Christmas horror to watch. And so we were scrolling through Shudder and Satan's Slaves, both versions are on there, of course. Ooh. And Bobby's like, oh, what is, can we watch Santa's Slaves? I was like, why isn't there a Santa's Slave? Maybe it needs to come out of Indonesia. Let's make a Indonesian horror Santa's Slave. I can't wait to see it.
All right. Since I got yelled at, my next pick would technically be my number five. So this is a Hong Kong romantic horror comedy directed by Charlie Yuen Chung Yang, called The Wizard's Curse from 1992. It was on YouTube last time I checked. As usual with YouTube, it's usually not a great copy, but at least it's got subtitles, so there's that. It is starring Lam Ching Ying, speaking of Mr. Vampire. So it's about a couple of evil sorcerers, and they get defeated by Ching Ying in the beginning, but through black magic, they're brought back and then merged into one evil leather-wearing sorcerer called a terrific vampire. And so what I mean, when it's two, it's usually just one guy in leather, but then like when they like, you know, power twins activate, it's a woman who like jumps out from behind him, and then they start fighting people. On top of that, the terrific vampire also shoots a spiked phallus at his victims, which then enters them and sucks out their brains for sustenance. Now I know I wish it was, but it's kind of not. I mean, it's a romantic horror comedy. Most of this is a rom-com. It's not gory or graphic, but it is a lot of fun. So Ching Ying later has to team up with his ex-wife to defeat the evil entity. And a common thing in a lot of these Hong Kong, especially like the vampire comedies, is like the Buddhist and the Taoist sort of like, no, my magic is better. My magic can defeat them better. And they're on opposing sides and they have to team up to beat them. But they can't do that unless their daughter has sex so they can use her spit to defeat the terrific vampire. Oh, yeah.
I love it. I mean, this just sounds like a good rom-com.
Oh yeah. It's totally, I mean, I don't make the rules or right. Or, you know, that's just what's happening in this movie. So it's a lot of fun. I think I gave this one like 4 stars. So.
Yeah, you gave it 4 stars. Can I just read a little of the letterboxed description here?
Sure.
It says, blah, blah, blah. Afterwards, a fiendish wizard steals the bodies of two criminals. Mm-hmm. He anoints them with the sperm of 99 satyrs and the blood collected from the menstrual flow of 99 bitches.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
You forgot about the 99 bitches.
I did. It's so easy to forget the 99 bitches. Oh, my God.
It's been a few months since I watched it, so yeah.
Okay, sorry, Faust. It looks like Wizard's Curse is going to the top of the watch list here.
It really is.
All right, Lindsay, what's your next pick?
My next pick, because I also ranked them, so I guess this is my number two. This is a movie I bought on DVD, then forgot that I owned it and bought it again because I love this movie so much. The Seventh Victim from 1943 is my next pick, directed by Mark Robson, of course, produced by Val Lewton. 1940s, everyone wearing too much fur, drinking martinis, and joining a satanic cult. So that is my next pick.
Very nice.
Where did you get the Blu-ray from, did you say?
It was a Korean import. It's really hard to get, so I ended up buying it twice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, region-free DVD. This one needs a Blu-ray, so I'm just putting that out there. Wink, wink. Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing movie. It's so tense and so dark and so kind of bleak, and it's so gothic, and yeah, everyone's wearing so much fur in like New York in 1940. So I absolutely love it.
Love it.
Nice. I know Joe Ziemba talked about, or he kind of hinted that this was a movie he really wanted for Terror Tuesday programming at some point. Yeah, it was the seventh.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it was when he was shown the Cat People. Valoon produced those, right? Mm-hmm. The Cat People.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I have not seen that movie, so I need to watch this.
I'm holding out for Terror Tuesday. I'm telling Joe next time I see him.
Yes. No, this is amazing. It is just absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, it's really quick, really short movie. It's like an hour and 11 minutes, so it gets in and out really quickly. And it is, there's a bangs from Jean Brooks that I want her hair. There's just this amazing, like, sleek black hair bangs and hair that is absolutely incredible.
Nice.
Anthony, next pick.
Okay, my number two is Louis Malle's Elevator to the Gallows, which I can't remember, super late at night. I turned on the Watch TCM app and was just, you put on the live TV and just had something playing on in the background. Well, it was this movie, and it was like in the middle of the movie, but there's no other movie that hypnotized me like this did, and I couldn't stop watching. I had no idea what was going on because I came in mid-story, and this is one that you need to follow along from beginning to end. And I had no idea what was going on, but I was so transfixed, mesmerized by the beauty of course, Jean Moreau, who's just one of the most gorgeous people in the world. But Louis Malle is like one of the, just his camera movements will put you in this weird, like, cinephile trance. It's something about the way he moves his camera is completely magical. Anyways, so I got Criterion Channel and finally watched this from start to end. And then it ended and I watched it again. And there are like three movies that I've ever done that with. Elevator to the Gallows being one of them. And it is, I don't know, it's just beautiful. It's a French movie. It follows kind of this affair that takes place between a married woman and this businessman. And then he is going to murder his employer to take his money or whatever. None of that really matters. It's all about Jean Moreau and her reactions. There's so many parts of this movie where it's just silent. It's just street noise. And I love movies shot in France. I would kill to live there. It's just so beautiful, but especially in the 50s, black and white photography, absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous. But there's so many moments in this movie where it's just crowd noise. It's ambient noise. And we're just following along Jeannie waiting for her beau. And she's getting more scared and stressed out. And then you have this other younger couple who they're kind of almost a Romeo and Juliet sort of, you know, star-crossed lovers sort of thing. The story is great, but I mean, it's just the whole movie is so hypnotic. It's really hard to describe. You just need to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I had the chance to see this at Austin Film Society. I think it's almost been 2 years ago. It was right before they closed for COVID. They were doing a Jean Moreau series there. And this is one of the films they were screening. And yeah, I loved it. It's fantastic. Hard recommend on that one.
Yeah.
No, it's been on my watch list for ages. So I might give me a push to finally get around to watching it.
Lance.
Yes.
Your next movie? Yeah.
So I am going with a Larry Cohen movie. I watched this one very early in the year, and it's his first feature as director, and that's Bone from 1972.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
And Joyce Van Patten and Andrew Duggan, who's in a lot of Larry Cohen movies. He was in the It's Alive films and Black Caesar. But this one's about a married couple played by Van Patten and Duggan who have this this mansion that's very casually invaded by Kodo, who plays Bone. We learn that they're not exactly as wealthy as one would think from the outside, you know, looking at their house. But, you know, Bone kind of invades their home, kind of takes some hostage of sorts, and he's demanding money. So he sends the husband off to go get some money from the bank. And as the husband's away figuring out his finances and stuff, he starts questioning his life. And am I really happy with my wife? You know, is this really the life I want? Mm-hmm. At the same time, his wife is at their home with Bone, and they kind of develop this very sexual relationship. But she's also kind of coming up with a plan to have Bone kill her husband. Everything just kind of starts snowballing from the first moment the movie starts, and just continuously presents the situations that they're hard to believe. Like it's incredibly funny. I was just blown away by it. That one was on Tubi. I think it still might be.
Yeah.
Again, another film that has like under 1,000 views on Letterboxd.
Really? Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That is ridiculous. I love Bone in this movie. Like, you know, he comes in and he's like so strong and terrifying, and like he's running the show here. But by the end, he's like, get me the fuck away from these crazy ass white people.
Exactly. Like he's like, this is too much. Okay. You guys are too fucked up for me. But yeah, this, I love a lot. I love Larry Cohen. The stuff is like, I could watch that movie all the time, but Bone pretty much just kind of leapfrogged to my top Larry Cohen film. I love this movie.
Yeah, so good.
Nice.
Erica?
All right. If any movie is going to get us canceled for me recommending it, it's this movie. My next pick is Twisted Nerve from 1968. It is a British thriller directed by Roy Boulting. It stars Hayley Mills as Susan and Hywell Bennett as Georgie. So I don't know if a lot of people have seen it, but you've probably heard it, because since Kill Bill came out, it's gained some more awareness, specifically as Tarantino does. He borrowed the whistling tune from Georgie in this movie. Mm. I'll insert the audio because I suck at whistling. I'll try it. It's... No? Okay. I'll just insert the audio.
I get it.
Okay, I'll insert the audio for a better version of that. So, Georgie pretends to be mentally disabled in order to gain favor with Susan. He kills people who interfere with his plans and is basically an irredeemable psychopath. So, even when it came out, there were complaints about the film connecting mental disorder, specifically in this film, Down syndrome. They were referring, the term that they use in the film is mongoloid, but they were connecting the film. I know. They were connecting Down syndrome with psychopathy. So if you can see how, you know, if you can get past how poorly this film has aged, and even for its time, it just wasn't. Not just how it treats and references disabilities, but there's also victim shaming to a very high degree in this film. Outside of that.
Yeah, obviously your favorite.
It is an extremely tense thriller. It's got great performances. Just, you know, if you're a cancel culture person, it's not for you. Just let me leave it at that.
I love the turn that Hayley Mills came out of Disney. All those live action movies that she made as she got older, like her teenage and 20 something years, like she started dipping into some real dark shit.
Yeah. This is up there with that, folks. So,
I love it.
That was on YouTube. It doesn't have a Blu-ray release yet. I don't know if anyone wants to touch this movie, but we'll see. Maybe someday. All right, Lindsay, last pick.
My final pick is Fade to Black from 1981.
Oh, yeah.
I just watched that. I think, Yeah, I think I heard Rob Cristino on If This Movie describe something as very much his bullshit, and this is very much my bullshit. It is this kind of psycho-esque slasher with these references to all these kind of old classic movies. So I was in from the get-go. Dennis Christopher plays this kind of loner who's working at a film distribution company who kind of descends more into madness, thinking he's these kind of 1930s and 40s characters like Cagney and Bela Lugosi's Dracula. Actually, the makeup is him as Bela Lugosi is insane. It's amazing. And The Mummy and a whole bunch of other people. And a really, it's just a really great movie. It's very, very self-aware, probably a bit too self-aware from for 1981. But I love the whole thing. You feel sad for Dennis Christopher, even though he's just making every single poor decision and, well, committing murder, which right from the get-go. But the way it kind of treats LA and this kind of mythology of LA is, I absolutely just fell in love with it. I just remember sitting up with a big grin on my face, poking my partner who was asleep going, "This movie is awesome." And then he's like, "Why are you making me watch an 80s slasher again?" So I fell in love with it. And I got the Vinegar Blu-ray. So yeah, which is, but the pretty, it's very pretty.
It is pretty.
Well, it has Tim Thomerson in it too.
Oh yeah, Samantha's
favorite. It does.
He's got a mustache and he plays a mean harmonica in there, if I remember. It does. A scene where he's just going for it.
Tim Thomerson, always the coolest guy in the room, no matter what kind of movie he's in.
He was going to be my most watched actor for a while. For the first half of the year, it was him.
Oh, my God.
Because I watched all the Trancers, all the Doll Man movies.
Yeah. Actually, Doll Man could have made this list easily. Doll Man's insane.
What is wrong with you people?
It's so good.
You got everyone to Doll Man. I don't understand.
What was yours? Didn't you watch it and your review was like, "God damn it, Lance"?
Yeah, no, it was "What the fuck, Lance."
Just a reveal of him being tiny, I think, is one of the greatest reveals ever.
Okay, Doll Man versus Demonic Toys. That's right up your alley, Erica.
It's in my like Full Moon DVD pack. I'm not going to watch it. I refuse. I will not.
Fade to Black's good. Good pick.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Anthony, your last pick.
Okay. I knew when I watched this for the first time this year, this hands down was going to be, nothing was going to top this. And it is Monty Hellman's Tulane Blacktop. And I watched it for, I did an episode of Cult Movies with Jonathan Hertzberg on it, and I watched it three times this year, and it is so, you know, I already talked about how much I love these 70s dramas and how it's such a unique flavor. Well, this is one of those, you know, this is early 70s and stars Dennis Wilson, of course, the drummer for the Beach Boys, and then James Taylor and Laurie Bird, and nobody has names. Warren Oates is in there. Warren Oates is a guy they call GTO in the credits. Laurie Bird is the girl. James Taylor is the driver. And Dennis Wilson is the mechanic. And these two guys, basically, they just drive around the country and they freelance like street racing. And I grew up not, you know, I'm not a big like race car guy, but my dad used to do lettering. He would do like the signs and lettering for old stock cars.
Oh, cool.
And so we would always go to like the dirt tracks and watch like the sprint cars go and the stock cars and everything. You know, all these cars that he had lettered and done the logos for. And so it was really fun to watch kind of an early version of this. These guys who are just, they're such gearheads. Like, they don't know how to act around other human beings. They just care about and know about their car. And like I said, I'm not a car guy at all, but this movie like makes me want to like build a hot rod from the ground up. It's so it's weird how it makes you want to do that. But the performances are, you know, these are non-actors besides Laurie Bird and Warren Oates, of course, but these two guys, they hardly say anything. Maybe between the two of them, they say a total of 150 words for the, you know, 2 hours of a movie. But oh gosh, it's the ultimate road movie. It's a perfect movie. I got super lucky with having watched like so many perfect movies, like movies I would consider to be perfect, but this one tops them all. I love this movie so much.
I was going to get around to watching it when I watched Cockfighter for the first time a couple years ago, and it just wasn't available anywhere at the time. And then I forgot about it. And this is a good reminder for me to circle back and be sure to get to it.
Yeah, it's there's the Criterion Blu-ray you can get, but it's not like I don't think it's streaming anywhere. So you kind of got to get that Blu-ray. But so worth it.
Very cool. Warren Oates is on my list of like podcast ideas. It's only because I thought of a catchy title for it. I don't want to do it, but like my podcast title idea was Without Warren.
Oh, that's so good, though.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
See? Someone else do it. I don't want to do a Warren Oates podcast. I love him, but I don't need another podcast.
Yeah, he is so great in this movie. Like, his character he plays is so sad. And, you know, he comes across as this kind of creepy asshole at first. But as the movie develops and you get to know this guy and you know, I think Warren Oates has such tragic eyes, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't know a lot about what, you know, how he grew up or what was going on in his life. And of course he died fairly young, pretty soon after making this movie, actually. Yeah. But he just had in all, everything he's in, he has these sad eyes and you just want to hug him. Like Warren Oates, it doesn't, even if you're watching Bring Me Ahead of Alfredo Garcia, I just want to reach through the screen and hug Warren Oates because he looks like a guy that needs to be hugged.
I'm going to revise the podcast name. I want to hug Warren Oates. Yes. That's it now.
Even Race from the Devil, because all he wants to do is go skiing and it's like these goddamn Satanists. No, you're right. He's got huggable eyes.
Absolutely. All right, Lance, last pick.
Last pick. I had already mentioned maybe a Bergman. It is a Bergman.
Oh.
I wasn't blowing smoke. It wasn't a psych. I watched a lot of Bergman this past year. A lot of first-time watches, some rewatches. We were on a Swedish cinema type thing, mm-hmm. Which obviously Mats Helge Olsen and Arne Mattsson aren't really Bergman. But I mean, Arne Mattsson, you could... He's a lot closer than Mats Helge Olsen. But Blood Tracks, I mean, Bergman could have made that, right? But this one was by far my favorite of the year that I've watched from him, and it's Persona, 1966.
Oh, yeah.
So
good.
Yeah, I'm probably the only one – well, I'm the only one on this episode that hasn't seen it, probably the only one that's listening to this episode. But if you haven't seen it, it takes you – I don't know. It's something that you, it's – well, like most Bergmans, it's difficult to explain. It's just an experience that you take in. This one's kind of a psychological drama that has like, it involves these characters that essentially start getting confused about who is who. And then you as the viewer kind of are sucked into that madness as well. You're completely lost where, you know, what's happening. I mean, I won't say you're lost, but you're, I don't know, you get filled with just thought and worry, like, this could happen to me. Like this could turn into, I mean, I'm talking about all Bergman at this point, yeah. But as I was watching, you know, it just leaves you speechless. And after it ends, I was just kind of like, okay, this is a perfect movie. And it's stuck with me since. It's essentially a two person cast, Liv Ullmann, who's in so many Bergmans, and B.B. Anderson. How do you say
that? Yeah. Anderson, yeah.
Ullmann plays an actress who stops speaking for some unknown reason. Her doctors can't really figure out anything that's wrong with her. Physically, she seems in perfect health. So the doctor kind of suggests that she go to this cottage out by the sea, and this young nurse accompanies her. And these are the two kind of personalities that start bleeding together. And it blew me away. I think as it blows almost everybody who's seen it away, but obviously as a Criterion release, everybody should watch it. Own it. I might've been the last one, but
no, I feel like Persona is probably like, it shouldn't be your first Bergman movie. Say like Seventh Seal for first Bergman movie.
Yeah. I mean, other notables, like my favorite Bergmans, I mean like, Fanny and Alexander, I loved.
Yeah. Virgin Spring, I think, is, I recommend to horror people.
That was my first Bergman.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, oh, real? Wow. Yeah.
But Persona is one where I'm like, I feel like you need at least five under your belt before you dive into that one.
It's a mood. I mean, it's...
Yeah, that feels like a good number because I think I've seen four or five before I dived into Persona and it felt like a one-person play. And I know there's more that, but that's kind of how it felt. Like it felt like this kind of internal monologue almost on this beach. Yeah, because I saw a couple this year. I know I saw Monica in the Summer. I think that's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Which is amazing. And my, I've still got a few big Bergmans I need to see, but I've always loved, Persona just blew. I was kind of confused afterward. I just remember sitting there just like going, I don't know how to take that exactly, which is kind of the genius behind it. Yeah. With this, I just go, maybe I should watch Sawdust and Tinsel again. I liked that movie. but no, Persona is kind of one, it feels ethereal. And I still don't know how to grab onto it, but even though I know it's a genuine, absolute, perfect masterpiece, I still don't know how to grab onto it. So I need to watch it again because you're just watching it going, holy crap, Bergman.
Yeah. His movies have so much rewatchability too.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And that's such a important characteristic of a really good director where it's like, I buy plenty of things that I'm like, no, that was good. I'm probably never going to watch it again. Put that in the sell pile. Like, you know, but Bergman, it's like, no, because it's a movie, because it's an experience, you can feel something different every time you watch any one of his films, really.
Yeah, I just watched Wild Strawberries a few weeks ago, too.
Yeah,
that's another one where I'm looking forward to watching again. Because, the interpretations are just so all over the place. Like, and I'm not going to say, and David Lynch has already said Bergman's a huge influence visually, especially some scenes in Wild Strawberries. But those two directors are very much, I could watch their movies over and over again.
I think a good first Bergman for anyone listening that would be interested is Smiles of a Summer Night. And that's just like a straight ahead kind of rom-com. And it's very funny. It's very sweet. And it's so unlike, you know, if you've kind of gotten into the deep end of Bergman, it's so unlike that stuff. It's not Persona. It's not, you know, Hour of the Wolf. It's not The Virgin Spring. It's a straight up rom-com and it's so good. But, Eric, I'm with you. Like, I think Bergman is so rewatchable and that's why, like, I'm super happy we have that giant box set because these are movies that I will and have gone back to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Closing it out with Demons. I was waiting for Lance's puzzled look. Demons, 1971. Thank you very much.
Yes. I was waiting. Which Demons?
Are you sure? You haven't seen it?
I heard it's by some guy named Bava. He sounds stupid. now, Demons 1971 is a Japanese revenge drama directed by Toshio Matsumoto. It is about a exiled samurai named Gengobi who has a chance to rejoin a clan of Ronin, but it costs money for him to do that. So his servant works hard to gather the money for Gengobi to rejoin them, but the geisha who Gengobi has been sleeping with asks him to help her gain her freedom and to marry her, which would, you know, ironically cost the same amount of money as he needs to rejoin the clan of Ronin. Gengobi ends up getting deceived out of all of his money by a group of people. So the rest of the movie is him getting revenge on all of them. The majority of the movie is that latter part of it, but I'm not technically, I'm semi-spoiling it, but as far as saying like he gets deceived out of his money, but how it happens is really like the joy of watching this movie. This was, I just watched this a couple weeks ago because it was on my child kill list and it does have one, but there are multiple scenes that actually replay in the movie with different outcomes. So it's like the characters are thinking about the outcomes before they enter into the scene. So you think it's like, oh no, that's how it ended up. But then it goes back to the beginning of the scene and it starts all over, but with a different outcome. Weird. The first time it happened, it really threw me off for a second. So that's why I'm telling folks about it, just to give you a heads up if you do watch it. So It's just over 2 hours long. I think it's about 2 hours 15, but the tension and pacing of this made it virtually unnoticeable for me. This is like, I'm not going to put it on like, you know, just to, as a Japanese samurai comparison, I'm not putting it on like Seventh Samurai pacing, right, because that's like the absolute master of pacing in a movie. But it is so well, it's just so well paced. It's extremely brutal. It's heartbreaking and engaging throughout. This is a high recommend for me on this
one. It sounds a little Sword of Doom. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called, right? With Toshiro Mifune?
Yeah, Sword of Doom. Yeah, yeah. It's Sword of Doom. If I had to compare it plot wise, it would be pretty similar to that. But there's this one scene in particular where Gengobi is running away from a group of people at night. It's in black and white. And the only thing you see is the lit lanterns that are being held by people. You don't actually see the people holding them. So it's like these lit lanterns bouncing on the screen, and you don't even see the people. I mean, it's just gorgeous. It was on YouTube. It looks great on YouTube. I didn't look up to even see if it had a release of it, because it was one of those where I'm like, well, I got to watch it for my child kill list. So it's on YouTube. I'll watch it there. If it does have one, I'm definitely going to buy it, because this is definitely one I could watch again, where I would want to introduce people to Demons 1971, Toshio Matsumoto.
Nice.
Yeah, I have seen Funeral Parade of Roses, which is by him as well, which is really great. Like, it took me a while to sink in, because I'm like, going, what is this movie? But it is absolutely a beautiful movie. So now I need, okay, so Demons has gone right up to my two to watch list.
Nice. I've got Funeral Parade on my, it's on my shelf. It's been sitting there forever. And
Really great. Yeah.
After watching this, I'm like, okay, well, now I definitely got to watch that. So, okay. So that's it for all of our top fives. I will put together a list of all of these movies, all 20, on Letterboxd, and I'll link that in show notes on this. So you can just click on that for a quick reference and add them to your own watch list on Letterboxd. Lindsay, can you tell folks where to find and follow you and Schlock and Awe?
If you want to follow Schlock and Awe, you can at Schlock and Awe 1 at Instagram and also on Twitter. And if you want to follow me, it's just Reading Geek on Twitter.
Perfect. Anthony, same for you, and Cult Movies.
Cult Movies, Twitter and Instagram at Cult Movies Pod. And then I am on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at AK Donnelly, AKDONELLY. And then you can read me at fthismovie.com.
Okay. And you're going to be having your list of these movies coming out on F This Movie, correct?
Correct. Yeah. The first week of 2022, we'll have our kind of best of lists, and I always do discovery. So I'll have my top 10 discoveries of the year.
Oh, you get to do 10.
I'm doing 10. Yeah.
I mean, we could have done that, but then this would have been, you know.
Well, we'd only be half over at this point.
I know.
Right?
It would be a very long episode, but... Anthony and Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us for this.
Yeah, this was a blast, guys, as always. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. For this was an honor.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was great.
All right. If you're not already, you can follow Unsung Horrors on Twitter, Instagram, Slasher, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Instagram, Letterboxd, and Twitter at Hex Massacre. Lance.
You can follow me at Letterboxd, Twitter, Instagram at L Scheibe.
What are you guys on Letterboxd?
AK Donnelly.
AK Donnelly, same. And then Lindsay.
Reading Geek as well.
That's right. Okay. Just making sure. I couldn't remember if you said it earlier, so I wanted to make sure. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And if you've seen any of these, feel free to get back to us, comment when we post about it. If you do end up watching any of these, same thing. Get back to us. Get back to Anthony. Get back to Lindsay. Let us know what you thought. We'd love to hear it. Night, y'all. Bye.
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 Winter's about over, spring will soon be here. I'll be looking forward to seeing you next year.
I'll carry your book from school.
I'll walk you to your door.
And I'll kiss you tenderly.
Say you love me,
but I- body, and things won't be the same. But I won't, no, I won't see you until next year.
Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.